Then we took a wrong turning. We'd had enough of the El Niño-lash coastal roads and were delighted at the sight of jungle. We wanted more, and our map showed a useful-looking secondary road that was heading roughly in the right direction. The road we ended up on only headed very roughly in the right direction and was a mixture of dirt and gravel. Had El Niño not trashed so many roads, we might have become suspicious a little earlier. I was already having problems with what my internal compass was telling me, but ignored it. The map had to be more or less right, didn't it? If it had been raining, the road would have given us a grim, slippery ride. Luckily, it was dry as a bone. The graded, dark, reddish-brown earth track took us swooping through the jungle with such a contrast to the rides of the previous days that it was complete and utter joy. Even the bikes seemed to revel in having something interesting to do. Our loads were perfectly balanced, and though the occasional ridges and potholes kept us awake, the ride was almost done in a jungle green dream. Except when there were army checkpoints, that is. The number of checkpoints should have made us realise that we were riding along a little used track that skirted the border. The fact that the soldiers were so surprised to see us should have been the next clue, though we were used to being stared at because of our novelty value. It should also have struck us as being strange that there were villages where our map said there were none, and where there were supposed to be towns, we didn't find any. At the time, I wondered if they were off a side road that we'd missed. Not a logical thought, really, though the map we had was probably the worst I'd ridden with to date. Eventually, one of the soldiers at a big checkpoint helped the penny drop. Thankfully, we didn't seem to have trodden on anyone's toes. The guards had been happy to see something new going on, and we were pretty much at the end of the track anyway. By this time, we were back up in the mountains, and they seemed like old friends. I loved the constantly bending roads and the views were stunning. I like riding above the clouds. It felt quite unnatural and was a delightful thing to be able to do whenever the opportunity arose. It's bizarre to be on a bike looking down at clouds, as if you were doing so from an aeroplane. The downside was that it was much colder at this altitude. Birgit said that the temperature and landscape reminded her of Austria. As we approached the market town of Vilcabamba, Henry's exhaust started to make strange noises. I was riding in my favourite position as tail end Charlie, and I could hear the tone change and wondered what was going on. It sounded nasty. By the time we stopped for a break, Birgit had noticed it too. It wasn't strange that she hadn't heard it earlier, because the slipstream carries a lot of noises away with it, particularly those that are created behind you. It was nothing major, but the problem would cause a bit of a tease over the following months. Henry's exhaust was rotting, and as the holes were appearing, the bike was becoming noisier. As a temporary repair, we cut open a soft drinks can and stuck it over the holes with heat-proof tape. It worked for a while. The road between Loja and Cuenca was supposed to be one of the most beautiful in Ecuador, so we didn't want to miss it, particularly since there were Indian villages along the way that were described as places where time had virtually stood still. In one of them, Saraguro, there was supposed to be a market on a Sunday that was pure Indian and nothing for the tourists. We were a little sceptical, as we thought that if we'd heard about it, then surely the locals would have found a way to make money out of visitors. But since it was in an out-of-the-way village, and we were going to be arriving on a Saturday night, it seemed too good a chance to miss. The Indian inhabitants of Ecuador dressed very differently from those of Peru. The women seemed to favour dark, loose skirts and cloaks of a rich blue-black, which they draped over brilliantly white blouses. The cloaks were held in place by large and intricately decorated silver brooches, and they wore dark, wide, flat-brimmed hats that kept the sun out of their eyes. The men in this town were very different. They were all wearing shorts and sported a sort of apron of a type I'd never seen before. I thought they looked great, but that they must be really hardy people to be wearing shorts on a day that was so cold I could see my breath. I felt at home with the men, as we all sported long plaited ponytails. The people were incredibly friendly and were quite taken by Birgit being so fascinated by their technique for spinning wool. Birgit seemed to be able to make friends anywhere we went. I think it was due to her genuine interest in people and their skills. The women were happily showing her how to spin wool in their style. They had a long stick onto which they had twisted a large clump of knotted, rough wool. With one end of the stick gripped firmly under an arm, they would tease out a twist of wool and fix it to something that looked like a cross between a knitting needle and a spinning top. As the women sat talking, they were all happily twisting and spinning away at the clump of wool until it almost miraculously found itself wrapped in regular-sized thread around the needle. The road north was hard going. Not so much with its technical difficulty, but for the fact that the surface was frequently wet. It also varied from loose gravel to mud, and there were some impressive potholes. To be able to enjoy the view, we had to stop and look. Life was very different up here, and along the roadsides were things that were endlessly fascinating.